The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dennis Norden, Dillis Powell, and Frank Muir. And now we come to round one, test their vocabulary for them. I'd like to know the meaning of the following words, 2 marks each time. Dillis Powell, what does pinfold mean? P-I-N-F-O-L-D. Pinfold.
Pinfold?
Yes.
Pin. You pin in.
Yes, you can. What would you pin in a fold?
Pin a fold in.
You're getting very close.
I'm getting close. Pin them in.
Yes. And what do you normally pin in?
Sheep. Sheep.
That'll do. It's an enclosure, a pin fold, or a pound for a stray or distrained cattle or sheep. And you can make it a verb to confine cattle in this particular way. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, what's the meaning of Hotchkiss?
Hotchkiss. It was a famous character, I believe, in Itmar, wasn't it?
Yes, there was.
Called Hotchkiss. And it's also a gun of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Have a shot at which kind?
Used on the frontier, on the northwest frontier, was it?
Yes, I think it would have been.
You don't really know, though, do you? We recognise
Chairman's
tone.
Surely gun's good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a sort of... I don't know anything about guns. I think it's a kind of machine gun.
That's what I wanted. 2 marks. Kind of machine gun named after its inventor. And there was, I think, also a Hotchkiss rifle as well. That's why I was a bit uncertain about the Northwest Frontier, because I think they may have used it before there were machine guns at all. Anne Scott James, what's the meaning of jalousie? J-A-L-O-U-S-I-E.
It's French for jealousy.
Yes, but it means something else. A contrivance.
Is it one of those pieces of furniture where you sit back to back, you know, serpentine, little, the opposite to a love seat?
I thought, I know love seat, but I didn't go to
love seat,
one.
You sit side by side,
yes.
And there's a sort of semi-circular kind where you sit back to back.
Yeah, I don't think you're sitting, not sitting at all. It's a nice idea.
It's something in decoration.
It's a window, isn't it a window?
Yeah.
Some kind.
Kind of a window.
Is that a window or the sort of screen that goes over windows?
Ah, the screen which people peep, which your lover, your husband peeps through when your lover, when one's lover, is with one in the room.
Brilliant description, Anne, yeah. 2 marks. It's a blind or a shutter made with slats that slope upward from outside so as to keep out the sun and the rain, but to admit air and some light. And I think Anne's explanation about the jealousy was absolutely right. 2 marks.
To admit air and a lover.
Frank Muir, what does larrup mean? L-A-R-R-U-P. Can be larrup, but larrup is more usual.
If it's larrup, it's French for the cord, which holds the jealousy, and you lower it up and down. If it's larrup, it's a larruping, isn't it?
Yes.
Good, a verb, to larrup,
mm-hmm.
Which means to... hit out savagely with a stock whip at.
Absolutely right. 2 marks. It's very obscure in origin, this word, but it does mean to thrash or to flog. It may come from an old Dutch word. Before we begin the next round, I'm going to read out a quotation for each team to write down, and the two women members will go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Dennis Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is, "One good turn deserves another." And Anne Scott James and Dennis, yours is, "The 1,000 natural shocks that flesh is heir to." And then in the last round, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these came to be said or written. Now round about the author of the week. What I want is to have the author identified. I shall then ask some more questions about the author and works. 2 marks. And here's a quotation for identification purposes. "Pray, my dear," quoth my mother, "have you not forgot to wind up the clock?" "Good God," cried my father, making an exclamation, but taking care to moderate his voice at the same time. "Did ever woman, since the creation of the world, interrupt a man with such a silly question?" Dennis Powell, Who is the author, and in which book do you find the quotation?
Well, a tiny, but very useful voice in my ear suggests this might be Sterne.
Yes, and the book?
It might be Tristram Shandy.
Well done. It's Lawrence...
Not me.
It's book one, chapter one, of Lawrence Sterne's Tristram Shandy, which appeared in 9 volumes over a period 1759-1767, and it was spoken at the moment of the begetting of Tristram Shandy himself. Now, Dennis Norden, can you name any 4 characters in that novel?
Tristram Shandy.
Yes. Good start. That's why I asked for 4.
Well, there's the mother and the father. And, of course, my Uncle Toby.
Yes. Yes, you are absolutely right. You haven't cheated. Could you give me 1 more?
No.
I'm bound to give you your 2 marks. Just from himself, his father was called Walter. There's Mrs. Shandy. I don't know her Christian name. I don't know anybody does. Corporal Trim, my Uncle Toby, Yorick, Dr. Slop, Widow Wobman, and 1 or 2 others. A good gang. Now, Anne Scott-James, what, according to my Uncle Toby, did our armies do terribly in Flanders?
Either well or badly, do you think?
No, they did something terribly.
Oh, they did something terribly. Drank terribly, ate terribly, made love terribly.
Talking.
Hmm?
Talking they were, while they were doing it.
Oh, swore terribly.
Yes, you got that. Our armies swore terribly in Flanders. This was a typically inconsequential interjection by Uncle Toby while Dr. Slop is pronouncing a great curse, which goes on for about 10 pages, against the servant in the book, Obadiah. 2 marks. Frank Muir, what was Uncle Toby's principal hobby or obsession, and what was the name of the house in the north where Sterne lived and which has recently been restored?
Uncle Toby was wounded in a painful place. and his manservant, the corporal, was also wounded in a less painful place. No, equally painful, but less private place. and their pleasure was to play war games, reconstitute the great battles using the bowling green.
Yes. Well done. And the house? Where's Stern lived?
I've got a picture of the house in my dining room over the sideboard, painted by my son, so I can tell you quite a lot about this if we've got the time. It's in a village called Coxwold.
Yes.
In Yorkshire.
He called it
Shandy Hall.
That's exactly.
And if you're in Yorkshire, you must go and see it, because it's absolutely beautiful. It's a 14th century cottage with the 18th century interior. It's quite lovely.
Well done, Frank. 2 marks. Well, in this round, we talk about saints. Modern Europe is at least Christian in origin, and the names of saints abound. Many of these saints' names are associated now with something fairly different from that for which they were originally canonized. What are these associations of the following saints? 2 marks. And Alice Powell, Saint-Cyr, C-Y-R, Saint-Cyr.
Well, that's a place in France where they train cavalry.
Absolutely right. Or Saint-Cyr-l'École. It's the famous French military academy just southwest of Paris. Napoleon moved it there from Fontainebleau into a building formerly occupied by a school...
Madame Maintenon.
That's right. School for the Daughters of the Nobility. Well done, Frank. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, St. Gotthard. G-O-T-T-H-A-R-D.
He passes.
I was going to say he must be the only saint who's well known for making a pass. That's that tunnel.
Yes.
Between Switzerland and Italy.
Well done.
Brilliant.
It's the Alpine Pass of St. Gotthard, or the tunnelled railway which avoids the pass and between Switzerland and Italy, as Dennis quite rightly says. Anne Scott James, St. Cecilia.
That's a nasty one. Oh, yes, I think you guys have a very famous convent of St. Cecilia.
Well, there's also Ode to St. Cecilia's Day.
Yes.
She's music. As your mother knew your own. wasn't something to do with music?
Yes.
And they have on St. Cecilia's Day, they have concerts everywhere.
Okay. Mm. Yes, she's the patron saint of music in general and of organ playing in particular, and you often see her in stained glass windows bearing a diminutive church organ. St. Cecilia, 2 marks. Frank Muir, St. Lubbock's Day.
St. Lubbock.
It sounds like a terribly dreary church with yellow pine interior and hissing gas lights. Mm-hmm.
Now, this mostly happens on Monday.
Happens on Monday. Happens on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Nothing.
St. Lubbock's Day.
Decent happens.
No, going nothing. Back to school.
Nothing happens. This is the point.
Oh, nothing happens.
Oh,
shops are closed.
Yes, that's it.
Shops are closed.
It's the day of closing shops on Monday. Yes.
And which day is that? It only happens at
Monday.
wait a minute.
Are you kidding us?
Jack, if you want to help, help.
I've helped an awful lot.
There's a kind of amiable
yes,
non-help.
What do you call Easter Monday?
Easter Monday.
What do I call Easter Monday?
St. Lubbock's Day.
Yes. All right. Yes, one and a half. Sir John Lubbock invented bank holidays, and he got them sanctioned by Parliament in his Acts of 1871. So St. Lubbock's Day means any of these bank holidays for which we have particular cause to be grateful to Sir or St. John.
God rest his soul.
Now, this is a round of tools of the trade. With what occupation or profession do you associate the following? 2 marks again. Dillis Powell. Sphygmomanometer. Sphygmomanometer. Sphygmomanometer.
Medicine, I should think.
Yeah, do you know what it does?
Well, I think you measure the blood pressure.
You're absolutely right. Well done, Dylan. Dennis Norton, Tailings Dam.
Tailings Dam.
D-A-M.
D-A-M, yes, of course. Tailings dam, I would say, is a mild oath permitted to private detectives when shadowing somebody.
Lovely thought.
I don't know, who used tailings and then has to have a dam? Farriers.
Farmer's wife.
Farriers. Would be all the tails when they're furrying. They fall in that kind of thing that they have on their laps.
You're on the right track, but it doesn't furge. It's another kind of residue. Then they can get further.
It's something that has a residue when you deal with it. Would it be making those crossbars for the tops of old-fashioned lampposts?
It could have started with that.
Mm.
I think it comes from metalliferous mining. It's the receptacle into which the useless residue drains after they've taken the metal ore and separated it out. Tailings was the old name for inferior leavings or residue.
Yeah. Well, anybody interested in careers for their children?
Now, Anne Scott James. Pointillism. Pointillism.
Well, it's a kind of painting.
Yes, it's a method rather than a tool. I would have said that. But what kind of method?
Well, where you make your effect or your picture with all sorts of little dots and spots.
Mm-hmm. Sura.
Such as Sura, would I suppose be the best known exponent.
Point about the dots.
The point about the dots?
Yeah.
Can you...
Were they all the same colour?
Well, no. These are coloured pictures, not black and white. Oh, yeah. These are all done. They're a form of multicoloured painting.
Yeah. All right, too. It's in painting. It's method of producing light effects by crowding the surface of the painting with small spots of various colours, which then your eye blends together for you, unless you go and stick your nose absolutely straight against it. And Seurat was the first well-known French impressionist to use this. Frank Muir, couch.
I think the couch glass.
No. I'm talking about tools of the trade.
For consistent producers of B pictures.
Casting directors, yes.
You're strangely silent, Jack.
I'm just trying to think whether that would do. I think it's
not. Yes,
it will. Well, it could be. It could be physiatrist.
Yes, that's what I wanted.
Oh, big
bummer. Psychiatrist. Then.
That's right. Psychiatrist or psychoanalyst. And I suppose there could be other professions, some of which Frank has already mentioned. Well, two it is. And now we come to the last round. And I go back to the quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. 2 marks again. Dr. Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation, "One good turn deserves another"?
The proverb.
Yes, do you remember any particular book of proverbs where you found it?
I've never read any books of proverbs.
Well, I did write. It is a proverb. It's in a slightly different form. I think it first appears in English in Ray's book of proverbs. "One good turn begs another." Now, in Scott James, the origin of yours, "A thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to."
Well, it's in the to be or not to be speech in Hamlet.
Yep, 2 marks. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their improbable explanations of how these quotations came into being. And for this round only, the marks will go to whichever unlikely story gets the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Frank Muir, and "One good turn deserves another."
Ah, yes. What was I going to tell you about? Oh, yes. The, quite recently, the BBC shelled out something like 200 quid in order to give me my first glimpse of one of the most beautiful sights in the world. It was seeing the sun come up from an aircraft. That is the most... it's always been my ambition... I didn't quite make it, actually. It's always been my ambition to have seen that. Oh, I suppose it was, a couple of years ago when I was 50, you know, when I'd gone through half my life. And I made a little list of all the things I'd achieved and all things, childhood ambitions, which I'd always wanted to do and had failed to achieve. The sort of things that everybody wants to do. Like, I'd never ridden a Derby winner. I'd never put a kipper through a bishop's letterbox. Never. Never had. I'd never sung Good King Wenceslas in Hebrew. And I'd never seen the sunrise. When the BBC said, go over and film a bit, and then, jumbo, only 3 days. Now, it was daylight going out, but coming back, it was a night flight. So what I had to do was to sleep soundly in New York, and I could stay awake on the night flight and see the sunrise in the morning. If you ever tried to sleep in New York, it's absolutely frightening. I bought some sleeping pills, which I don't normally take, and they were absolutely useless. I just read the instructions, and it said, I was lying in bed, and it said, take one an hour before retiring. Well, I don't know, you know, it's about 10 years before I'm even thinking of slowing down. Giving it up. So the following day, I was staggering around, and then the producer of the programme said, well, get the wax things, you know, plugs. They're absolutely marvellous. Went to a chemist. Lovely little things they are. Little, rather large, actually, wax things sitting in cotton wool in a sweet little box. Absolutely hopeless. Did nothing for me. And were hell to swallow it to begin with. It was a very sad Frank who got on that aircraft home. My eyelids were like sort of warm lead bottle tops. It required the use of the fingers to keep them open. I got on the plane at 10 at night. Settled down, jumbo. I wasn't interested in watching the polo match or the... or anything like that. I wanted to really just sit in the seat and go to sleep by the window, facing the direction the sun's going to come up at dawn, you see. I fought against sleep. But I went to sleep. But when I awoke, there in front of me was the most beautiful sight in the world. Dawn. It's marvellous. There's a kind of dark greyness which is suddenly suffused with a sort of pink which then goes redder. And I sat there and I thought, I've seen it. It didn't last very long. It soon came to an end. In fact, it said the end across it. And I realised I'd been watching the film which they sell on those aircraft. But it was so beautiful that next time I'm going to save up and go and not watch the film, but stay awake and actually see a real sunrise, because it is absolutely marvellous. It is worth every penny, every newpence that I hope the BBC will pay me to go over and see it again. As the proverb says, one good dawn deserves an airfare.
Now he passed on to Dennis Norden's story, and if you remember, his quotation was, "The thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to."
When the phone rings at 5 o'clock in the morning, it's never good news, is it? And sure enough, that morning, Mr. Norden, St. Albans Police Station here. Do you have a son who came here for the pop festival? I said, well, depends. What is he actually nicked for? If it's that girlfriend of his, you can never trust a history of art student, whatever she... He said, no, Mr. Norden, at this moment, your son is stretched out on the floor of this station. I think you'd better get up here, sir. Well, you can imagine. As I whizzed up that M1, my mind was in a turmoil. Where did I go wrong with the boy, I kept asking myself. And that was the question I repeated to the police sergeant as I stood in that police station, gazing down at my son's recumbent form. Where did I go wrong? Well, sir, he said, from the time you took getting here, I should say round about Watford roundabout. No, sergeant. No, I said, no, if that boy is guilty, then I am guilty. His crime is my crime. He said, I reckon it is your crime. I said, what do you mean? He said, did you buy him that second-hand sleeping bag, sir? I said, what if I did? I wanted him to have everything that I never had. Same reason I sent him to Rodine for his schooling. What if I did buy him the sleeping bag? He said, that's why I was brought in here, sir. The zip's stuck. You can't get out. He stood and gently nudged the sleeping body with the toe of his boot. I gazed down at the gently snoring figure of the last of the Norden line. He hadn't even had the sense to wake up. As I stood there, my mind performed an intricate mathematical calculation. One mother, one father, one midwife, one state-registered nurse, 8 babysitters, 14 kindergarten teachers, 3 general practitioners, 1 tonsil specialist, 1 orthodontic dentist, 32 public school teachers, 2 mathematics crammers, 3 tennis coaches. It had taken 57 people to produce this. I turned on my heel and walked out into the night. You hear a lot about the thousand natural shocks that the flesh is heir to. Isn't it time those who have only sons told the world about something much more important, the thousand unnatural shocks that the heir is flesh to?
A very touching story. And I think by your vote, ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Norden wins the contest of the stories, and he and his partner, Anne Scott James, also win this entire contest. And that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland, who also compiled the questions. The program was devised by Tony Schwan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.